This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub, and we have the MGO Blog Roundtable coming up. But a couple of the crew members are already on a little early. One from down in sunny Florida. That's where we find our good friend Craig Ross. Craig, good morning. How are you?
Morning. I'm in Fort Myers. It's a beautiful morning. Supposed to get up to 80 here today. Unfortunately, I'm only here for 2 or 3 days, so I'll be back into the ordinary weather.
All right. And Seth Fisher. Seth, how are you, man?
I am so sick of logging onto these things and seeing somebody in Florida. Like, do you see the color of the light coming in here right now, Greg? Like, do you see the difference online? This is a very visual podcast. No one can see the difference online. There's a difference.
I'm curious, is there a difference for you guys? I mean, because you obviously, you are part of your job is to sort of speak to the fans, speak to, answer their questions, speak to how they're feeling, sort of give them perspective. And I'm curious, are you feeling like the fans are feeling about this whole Harbaugh thing right now? Or are you more, I don't know, measured, more calm, more reserved? Because I ask that question because that's the sort of tone and temperament I sense coming from the Michigan Athletic Department right now. And I'm curious where in that spectrum you guys fall.
Yeah, because I don't know things like you do, so I can be like right along with the fans and like, okay, I'm speculating along the same way they do because I don't, and people keep asking me thinking that I have some insider information. I got nothing. I got nothing at all, and I can just kind of see how things are going. I don't know, man. I've been kind of floating along expecting that they'll figure it out eventually. My feeling now is that Harbaugh probably is, you know, testing the waters. And there's a couple positions open that don't have GMs, so it's kind of hard for them to make a move if they're even going to. So we're just kind of waiting.
Well, my attitude is, you know, that Jim needs to do what's best for himself or he perceives as best for himself. And if that's go to the NFL, that's fine with me. I won't get worked up. And if he stays at Michigan, that's great with me. He had a great year this year. And to me, the issue is the assistant staff and is the coaching staff going to remain in place by and large? Because I think it's a good staff. I think they proved that this year. They're a young staff. They're a smart staff. I can't see any, you know. And so to me, the interesting thing is, has Ward Manuel, and I assume he has, figured out what's going to happen on the off chance, I would view it as an off chance, on the off chance that Jim Harbaugh leaves. And I have a guess on who the candidate internally might be, but it seems to me his best move is to who the internal candidate might be to be the head coach. And if that isn't plausible or feasible, to have someone come in from the outside who will say, yes, I will keep your staff. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty unusual outside coach, as we've learned, is that usually a guy comes in, he wants, quote, his own guys. He doesn't want a bunch of other people Now, obviously, that was a mistake when Rich Rod came in and I think cost Michigan dearly. But we'll see. My guess is Jim Harbaugh will be coach at Michigan next year. It's been my guess from the beginning, but if not, if the staff stays, pretty much intact, then I'll say, hey, that's good. That's a good outcome either way.
you know, I think you are on the same wavelength as, you know, they are internally in the athletic department, all the way up to, I mean, and most importantly, Warren Manuel, with the perception of this staff. I think very strongly that they would prioritize keeping this staff as intact as possible. My sense is that Ward loves the young staff. He loves the revamp staff.
Yeah.
And would, if there is an external candidate, would really want to, like you said, have that coach keep this staff, keep as much of this staff as possible, right? And that's a pretty unique candidate, which then, you know, points the attention internally. And I think there would be a couple of candidates that would be considered. And that's one of the things we will talk about in the MGO Blog Roundtable. I would want you guys to make the case for each of these internal candidates. And how would you feel about it? Let's just start out. How would you feel about an interim? Because Ira and I talked about that in the first hour, as if you were going to have an interim, this would be kind of the best case scenario to really try one out, because you're inheriting a winning program with some real promise next season, with the staff that interim would know, and a good one at that. You're going to, you know, sort of give that guy some guardrails to see if he could handle it. You know, in these circumstances, this would seem to be a pretty good one, with a fail safe that you could remove that interim tag if you felt like that guy wasn't ready. I'm curious how you guys would feel about an interim tag on a head coach.
Oh, I had no problem with it at all. I mean, that's what they did with Lloyd Carr way, way back. And that seemed to work out fine, at least in my opinion. Maybe some will disagree, but I think it worked out fine. And so I don't have any issue with the interim idea to see, well, let's see how this goes. I also, just sitting here thinking about it this moment, I know no team has ever had this, but what about co-head coaches? What if they took someone on the offense and made him a co-head coach with someone on the defense? Now, if those two people were completely copacetic. Now, I was involved in an organization where this more or less happened, and it worked fine. But you needed the right two people to do it. People who were friends, people who weren't jealous of each other, people that could communicate. That can work. I've seen it work. So I've never seen it on a football team. I've never seen it on any sports team, but I'm not sure that it's an impossibility. And I could see some upsides where it might minimize some frictions within the staff. And you know, and that's the problem. One thing that comes to mind with an outside hire, you bring in an outside hire, it's got to be someone the staff buys into. Mm-hmm. It's not just the outside guy saying, oh yeah, I can work with these guys. These guys are good. They're, you know, it's the staff having to say, wait a minute, this guy has got to buy into us. He's got to be someone that we support and buy into and can appreciate, you know, his directions. So that's a complicated thing. And so the idea of an interim coach to me makes a lot of sense. But I'm not want to say one size fits all, that maybe there's, you know, maybe there's some alternatives.
What do you think of interim there, Seth?
I think that Craig is wrong about the Lloyd Carr situation. I think that was a really untenable situation. Michigan, if you go back, I just posted an article recently about the attrition that Michigan's had over the years and transfers. And there's a huge bump right around then, right when Carr was the interim coach and they just fired Moeller, because people were leaving. People were like, there's no, I don't know who's going to be my coach next year. And the other thing that happened in that locker room is the players came around Carr. A lot of the players were like, look, if you want us to stick around, if you want us to continue, we want Lloyd Carr. And that's what happens. Like, that coach becomes, he knows who he's got to please, right? So if you put an interim tag on Gattis or something, the players are going to rally around Gattis, and he's going to end up having to be the head coach. You can't interim somebody and then fire him without losing a lot of guys, because that coach is going to be going to those players and making sure that they adore him, right? Like, that's going to be his thing. I don't think that's tenable. I also don't think two guys is tenable. You know, I'm basing it on history and, you know, the way that two kings have been tried in the past, small kingdoms and whatnot. And kingdoms are pretty much the size of a football program. You know, you got your 100 or so armsmen around you, and then you got the million people who don't have any say, but they really care. That's never worked. It's always ended up with, like, one kills the other, or one of them, like, you know, dies surprisingly. It's not going to happen.
I don't think it'll happen. but I do think it's viable, because I've been involved in an organization where that more or less did work.
But are they football coaches? Were they putting football coaches in charge of that organization? Because we're talking about football coaches here.
It was a somewhat more volatile situation, actually, than a football team. And about as large, or indeed to some extent larger. So I don't know. I think it is something that could work. And with Lloyd, you know, you're right. Players stayed because of Lloyd. And then at the end of the year, I don't think his first year was spectacular. It was, I think, 8-4 or something like that, or 9-3.
It was 8-4. They were all 8-4 around that time. They were 4-8-4 years in a row.
And, you know, no one was, you know, there was some rumbling in the fan base, but by and large, people weren't upset. It worked out fine. Incidentally, have you heard names in possible interim hires? Because the name I keep hearing is a little bit of a surprise. I mean, little.
You keep hearing Mike Hart?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're gonna do, I think Mike would definitely be considered.
Okay.
I think Mike would get consideration. I think Josh Gattis absolutely would. Yeah, and then we also are gonna, you know, I think we should actually sit and talk about the possibility. I know it's not a name that's been mentioned very much when it comes to, you know, the interim possibilities here. He's only been a college coach for, what, one season? You know, you don't have a lot of buzz at this point. When you talk about the possibility of a Mike McDonald as an interim coach, but I think Mike McDonald's going to be a head coach. So what I want you guys to do in the break is make the case. Make the case for Mike Hart. Make the case for Josh Gattis. Make the case for Mike McDonald. Because on varying levels, I think that all three guys would receive some consideration. So let's talk about that on the other side. Gave you guys a little bit of time to sort of think about it, and then we will tackle that question when we return here. Also talking about the hire of Mike Elston, so stay tuned for that. And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com, Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side, and it is MGO Blog Roundtable time, 9 o'clock every Thursday morning. And fellas, I can only imagine what it's like over on MGOblog.com during another Harbaugh saga. I mean, it must be fun to see folks every minute, every moment, say, hey, what's new? What's new? And you got to tell them, well, you know, kind of it's the same as it was the last time you asked about this. Good morning, fellas. How you doing today? Starting with you, Brian Cook. What's up, my man?
I'm all right. And I you must not moderate a message board, because it's not fun.
Seth, how are you this morning?
I'm fine. I'm the guy who moderates the message board.
And Craig Ross, welcome back, man. How are you?
I'm fine. I get... I've had a lot of questions about this. I have a lot of email about what's going to happen with Jim Harbaugh. And as I said in the prior section, I don't really much care in some sense. I, you know, if he comes back and is a coach, great. If he's not, I just hope they keep the staff intact. And beyond that, whatever Harbaugh does, I hope it's best for him.
Well, look, I think, and I've been saying to people, you don't begrudge him this opportunity, because I think the NFL window is closing. He's 58 years old. He's coming off of the best season in recent memory, one of the best seasons of our lifetime. Happens to have a couple of franchises that he's connected to with job openings. I mean, look, if you're going to look, now's the time to do it. And he would have left Michigan in a really good situation if he were to decide to leave. That being said, I still think it is highly likely that he returns to the University of Michigan, even if he still has his eye at least a little bit open to the NFL. Before we get to talking about that, though, let's talk about the hire of Mike Elston and your impressions of and thoughts on that move, starting with you, Brian. What do you think of the addition of Mike Elston to this staff?
Well, I think it's a pretty logical move. You have a program alum who is coaching for a regional rival who's been doing a lot of work in recruiting. Like, it's a pretty natural fit. I don't, you know, it's something that once you look at Mike Elston's bio, it's like, oh yeah, of course.
All right, Seth.
Yeah, man, I love it when I can go in the Bentley library to find the photo that I need to announce a new assistant hire. Like, that's that. I mean, that I think Elston got to the point. This is an all-star hire, and like, this is one of the guys that people, you know, you want to make a short list of great defensive line coaches around college football. But I think Elston got to a point where he got passed over 5 times for defensive coordinator at Notre Dame. And at that point, it's like, well, if I'm going to be a defensive line coach and I'm stuck in that spot, I might as well do it for my alma mater. Because I think Elston's still friends with a lot of the guys he plays with. I know, you know, he's gone out with a couple of them before after games. He's, you know, he still had that Michigan-ness to him. So I think it worked out for both parties. And this is, you know, what's great about having a great program in the 90s is that, you know, it's still paying off today.
Yeah, man, and I think, Craig, it's one of those deals where, like Seth just said, you get passed over a few times. Part of maybe breaking through that ceiling is branching out. You're already branching out from Brian Kelly, branching out from Notre Dame, having them see you do it someplace else. And if you're going to branch out, I mean, it's awful comfortable to do it back home.
Yeah, it's as Brian and Seth have said, it's a natural fit. He played here. He, I believe, was a grad assistant here for a couple of years before he went out and into the Notre Dame, or I guess he was with Kelly at Central, I think, for a year, and then Kelly took him to Notre or Cincinnati, perhaps, and then Notre Dame. So he's been following Kelly around, and they've been pretty loyal to each other over the years. But for whatever reason, whether it's being passed over or not wanting to go to Louisiana, he's here, and I think he's proven he can recruit. He's recruited well on the defensive line in particular, where he coaches, and he's coached well on the defensive line. His players have done well, so it feels like a natural fit for Michigan. You know, there was a lot of noise about Ryan Osborne. Not sure how or why that this particular choice was made, but in terms of Elston, looks right, looks good. And I assume, as Sam has said, that Elston's around regardless of what happens to Jim Harbaugh, as that would be pretty unconscionable.
Yeah. Oh, look, I you got to do what you got to do. Obviously, yeah. I tell the Jimmy Doherty story all the time. Behind the scenes, you know, Jimmy Doherty was an offensive coordinator at San Jose State. I don't know if I told this story during the recruiting roundup, but I know I've told it on the Michigan Insider. He was the offensive coordinator at San Jose State when Jim first got hired, right? He's putting together a staff. Jimmy Doherty actually was here for, man, a week going into the office. Here for a week going into the office, thinking he was going to be the wide receiver coach, right? Well, Jed Fish comes open. And yeah, obviously, Jed Fish, really, really good offensive mind. He wasn't available when Jimmy was first, you know, being considered for the job. I don't know if Jed Fish is interested. Well, when Jed Fish is interested, Jed Fish gets hired. Now Jimmy has to go back to San Jose State. But, oh, wait a minute. San Jose State has hired Al Borges as the coordinator. So Jimmy had to go back to San Jose State as the wide receiver coach after giving up the offensive coordinator job to come be the wide receiver coach at Michigan. So, again, I mean, you know, circumstances kind of move you around. We've seen circumstances kind of move Jim around in the past. I think the difference here is a guy like Mike Elston would know the lay of the land, and you're at home. I think he's safe no matter what happens with Jim, especially when you consider this. I think that they would prioritize keeping this staff intact. As a matter of fact, I know that would be something that they would try to do, whether they hire internally in an interim capacity or go external. They would want to do that. So let's play this interim game. Let's assume, for the sake of argument, that Jim goes. All right. Not expecting that to be the case, not hearing that's going to be the case, but we're doing the what if. So if Jim leaves and Mike Hart, make the case for Mike Hart. We'll start with you, Craig. Make the case for Mike Hart. Even if you don't believe he should be the guy, I want to hear what you think the case would be for Mike Hart to be the interim head coach at Michigan.
Well, you know, the one thing I don't know is how Mike Hart gets along with the other coaches. I'm guessing it's good. I'm guessing his relationship is good. But the things about Mike Hart are, one, was a Michigan guy, came out of Michigan, was maybe the best running back in my history of watching Michigan football. Two, he's very smart. Three, he's personable. And four, he hates Michigan State. And so, though, you know, probably more than anyone else on the staff. I mean, I could see Mike Hart as being, and he played in the NFL, which gives him a certain level of cachet. So I would say Mike Hart, you know, and it's also been rumored from a couple of people in the media, prominent people, that Mike Hart is the choice if this happens.
I don't believe that that's been determined, but I do believe he would be.
I don't believe it's been determined either, but this is what has been mentioned by not Sam, but by a couple of others in similar positions.
Yeah.
So in any event, yeah, I mean, I think Mike Hart is a logical interim choice.
Yeah, he would have a good portion of the fans, I would think. Eric Tolbert just messaged in over Facebook. I love Mike Hart. To me, this would be the equivalent to the Juwan hire for football. Seth, what would you make the case for? Even if it's not your position, make the case for Mike Hart as the interim pick.
I'm not making a case for Mike Hart as the interim pick. The guy has been a running backs coach. He's been at Syracuse. He's been at Indiana. He's been at Michigan. Those are the only programs he's actually seen run other than the NFL team. If you want to get a former running back for Michigan who, you know, has actually had some head coaching experience, Ty Wheatley is a head coach right now. I think he'd be a better candidate than Mike Hart.
Okay. Brian Cook?
Well, I think the only way that you're putting yourself out on a limb if that's the way you go. So you'd have to be very confident that Mike Hart is both the most likable and most organized person available, because he's not going to be a coach who is essentially calling the plays on one side of the ball or the other, most likely. He's going to be a CEO type, which is fine. That works. But you got to make sure that, like, you know, promoting your running backs coach isn't going to cause a riot with your coordinators. It isn't going to cause a riot with the other coaches. It isn't going to cause a riot with recruits. And, you know, from what I know of Mike Hart, I think that's maybe something that would be plausible, but that would be a hard sell. And so you'd have to be really convinced that, like, this was your dude.
Yeah, that's just right on the money. I mean, that's the problem. I mean, you're jumping your OC. And whether jumping your OC creates ill feelings in the staff, and it sure might, you know, is a problem. You've got to, if you go with Mike Hart, you've got to have the staff buying into it.
Yeah, I mean, there is a recent precedent for this in Dabo Swinney, because Swinney was just a wide receivers coach.
Okay.
He got leftover coordinators, and he kept Brent Venables for far longer than he should have been able to keep Brent Venables, right? Mm-hmm. So there are guys out there who are a pleasure to work with and work for, who are excellent recruiters, who won't get in your way, and who can run a program and then provide you the coordinator or springboard to a head job somewhere else. So that would have to be the situation. I don't know if that's the case or not. I don't think anyone who's not inside the program could know that.
I agree.
All right, so now let's go over to Josh Gattis, your OC, starting with you, Brian. Make the case for Josh Gattis.
Well, I mean, he is coming off the Broyles Award. He's your most experienced coordinator. He's a guy who, you know, young African-American. I think that's going to be good for a lot of reasons. A guy who probably knows who Little Wayne is, which is always nice.
Who is Little Wayne?
Exactly, Craig.
I've never heard of Little Wayne.
So, you know, if you're looking for an internal hire, he's the one that makes the most logical sense because he's the guy with the most experience. He was in the running for the Virginia job, so he's a guy who's probably going to be a head coach somewhere sooner or later.
That just seems logical and reasonable to me. I mean, but again, it might be plausible for Mike Hart to get the job. It might be, but it sort of depends on, well, how does this staff work together? What does the staff think? How does it play with them? But it feels like if he went this direction, that Gattis is the more plausible, the more likely choice. Assuming Harbaugh's going, which I don't think he is, but that's,
Right. Hey, this is all hypothetical. Yeah. All right, so Seth, make a case for Josh Gattis.
Brian made the case already. He's a guy who was probably really close to stepping up this year. I think that, if there had been a few more openings or an opening that didn't have a more obvious choice, that he probably would have been a head coach this year. That's always dangerous when you're, because Michigan took a chance on Gattis in the first place, right? He'd never been an offensive coordinator, and then they went down and got him, and that worked out. So, it would basically be the same thing all over again. I think Michigan's a little, that would be a let's keep the staff together. But I think that they should at least go out and see if there are other guys who would be interested in taking over the staff. Now, the whole staff's not going to stay together, right? Let's say Harbaugh does jump. I'm guessing Mike McDonald would probably want to go with him because he's an NFL guy. He's been he spent a lot of time in the NFL. Unless McDonald's getting a huge, unless McDonald's the bad coach, he'd probably want to go. And then Hilo is McDonald's guy. So you're still going to be replacing, a few guys. So if there is a good coach out there who wants to bring his defensive coordinator and likes the rest of your staff, that's a possibility too. Michigan doesn't have to just look inside. But if they do look inside, Gattis, I think, is the only choice. I mean, the thing about having a young staff is they don't have a lot of experience, right? So, Gattis, Moore, those are the guys who've been around only a little bit, right? So Klingscale's been around, but he's only been at Michigan for a year. But as long as the rest of the staff, that's where they want to go, I mean, I would be comfortable with Gattis. I wouldn't want to put an interim tag on. I don't like the interim tag. I think that it's too easy to recruit against. I think it leads to some program instability and makes the coach make decisions based off of keeping his job instead of what's best for the program. And I don't know. We haven't seen Gattis run a football program before, so it'd be a lot of questions. If you're doing that, it's because they see him as like a Ryan Day, as like a guy that they thought was going to be a head coach, and we didn't plan on doing it right now, but it's time, so take over.
What if you think, and this is the last hypothetical, again, not saying that this would be your position. I know your position, you just said that, Seth, and I'll start with you. You just said that Gattis would be the only choice, but what if you think Mike McDonald is a star and that he's going to be the guy out of this contingent that, rises the highest? What about him? Make the case for Mike McDonald.
I mean, I'm not. I'm not just like Mike Hart. Before I was at MGO Blog full time, I worked in trade magazines, and I, put in a lot of work when I was younger, and then at 28, they made me publisher. It was the first time anyone had ever become a publisher from the editorial ranks, and by far the youngest person to ever be named a publisher. And I did terrible. I was the worst publisher that they've had in the history of that company, even though I thought I knew the business, I thought I'd been there. There's so much more organization that comes into running a large operation, and my operation was not even close to Michigan football size operation. And you want to throw that on top of a guy after he's been a coordinator for 1 year? I mean, that's why you don't do that. If he's a star, you want to hold him as your defensive coordinator. I understand that. You can pay him more to be the defensive coordinator. You could also say, look, man, this is – you spent a few years here. Next time we're down doing this, 5-10 years down the line, you're going to be a name that comes up for Michigan head coach because you were a coach here. That happens. So I think that would be the track for Mike McDonald. It's just way too early right now.
Yeah, I mean, you guys don't have to go that deep if you don't want to, but I just – curious you guys' thoughts on the case for Mike McDonald. That only because his is the only other logical name right now to be mentioned. And again, probably lower on the scale than the other two for the reasons that we talked about, but still one to consider. So your thoughts, Brian?
Well, he's 34. So that's actually a big negative. I don't think the coach of Michigan can be younger than me. Craig crossed that bridge a long time ago. No, like, so
decades ago.
I mean, it's so similar to the case for Mike Hart. If you just think that this is your dude, I mean, he came in and he did something pretty remarkable with Michigan's defense in year one. So that was a very terrible defense a year ago. You look at the personnel they had and everybody's like, I don't know about this. And you're installing a pretty complicated system that has a lot of disguise in it. And the number of busts Michigan suffered over the course of the year was far lower than I think any reasonable expectation would have been. So that indicates to me that this is probably a pretty good coach. Now, you don't have much of a recruiting track record with him because he was in the NFL, but through John Harbaugh, you do know him pretty well. And so, like, if this is just the dude, then he's just the dude. But I don't think you could accurately predict which guy it should be. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe there's one obvious choice where everybody's like, okay, yeah, this is the guy. But usually that's not the case, and everybody is vying for themselves. And I think he would understand if someone got picked over him because he's been a coordinator for 1 year and he's not, like, the heart and soul of four different Michigan teams like Mike Hart was. So, I think that it's really just about personal qualities that don't really come to the surface unless you are inside the program.
Craig Ross?
Yeah, I tend to think that McDonald should get paid based on the work he did this year. But I think he's probably not going to be the right choice for Michigan head coach at this moment. I think that for that to happen, you'd have to have Harbaugh going and the entire coaching staff sitting down and saying, yeah, we think Mike is the right guy. You know, absent that, I don't think it happens. I can't see it. And regardless of how well he did this year, and I think we all agree he did well and better than we ever could have imagined. So
yeah, I think Seth nailed it. You could pay him. You could pay him a lot. I mean, that would be one of the things, one of the arguments for the additional arguments for hiring from within. Your salary pool for your assistants almost certainly would be enough to entice those guys to stay, even those with NFL options. Probably of the guys that Jim would try to take with, I actually think McDonald would be the guy that would be the most likely to stay based on what you could pay him, right? Mm-hmm. I think Weiss would be gone. I think Jay would be gone. I don't think that you could keep those guys. But McDonald, I think you would have a shot if you were willing to pay for it. So it'd be interesting to see. Just a couple of notes. O-Dog 75 said, have this conversation with Jim interviews. I'm sick of media. So I think what you – look, you should be – tired of false, you know, reports that, you know, don't have any real news. Just, you know, throw out things like it's news and it's not. You could be sick of that, but that this is a thing is not media driven. I mean, if Jim Harbaugh wanted to shut down this discussion, he could. He absolutely could. You understand that, don't you, O? What this means is that he is legitimately looking at the NFL. Now, maybe not in a very strong way. He maybe isn't courting every job and throwing his name in every hat, but NFL interest is there. And so I do think the media is doing the job in covering that. Some of the things that are thrown out there that are just that have no substance to them, I think you have a right to be tired of that. Another one. This one from Eric Tober. As a coach, I just haven't been impressed with Gattis as a play caller up to this year. Who's to say he's not a one-hit wonder? Mike Hart was the assistant head coach at Indiana, so he's more than just a running backs coach. I can't remember who said that about him just being a running backs coach. But
that was me. That was me. And he was assistant head coach for pretty decent Indiana team, too. The thing is, any of that Mike Hart talk where, like, he is, like, the next guy or everyone loves him or this guy's got it, I don't think fans can see it. Like, if you're just showing his resume sheet, and that's kind of what we have, right? I don't have inside. I don't talk to the coaches. I don't know what people think of Mike Hart inside the program. I know that, you know, he was a pretty good running backs coach at Indiana, and they liked him there. But you know, maybe he is. I can only give you the I can only base my opinion off of information I have, and I don't have information about, like, you know, Mike Hart's soul and what he's like as a person, because I, you know, I maybe shook the guy's hand a couple times.
Well, you certainly, I certainly wouldn't elevate the discussion of Mike at the expense, like you just did, Eric, of sort of downgrading Gattis. He won the Broyles Award. You talk about track record. I don't know what you think of James Franklin. Probably not much, but he has coached successfully under James Franklin, Nick Saban, and now Jim Harbaugh has been a coordinator for 3 years. You look at similar moves at other programs. You know, you could say that his track record at the high major level, at the elite Power Five level, is more pronounced than, say, Ryan Day's or Lincoln Riley's, even, and certainly Marcus Freeman's, who had less Power Five experience walking into those jobs. And certainly their tenure as coordinators at their current jobs was not as lengthy, I think by a year with Lincoln Riley, as lengthy as Josh Gattis's. So I think you can make a case for both guys, but I certainly wouldn't diminish Gattis in the argument for.
And one other thing about Gattis, I mean, he's been here without really a quarterback that sort of probably fits the style of play that he wants. I mean, he had what, Shea Patterson for a year and
2 years.
2 years. Okay. And that, you know, Shea Patterson was not he was a reluctant read option guy and RPOs. I don't know about how, you know, those may be what Gattis likes. I think it is, but it's not what he seemed most comfortable with. And this year,
certainly wasn't what Cade was comfortable with.
And it certainly was what Cade wasn't, you know, most, comfortable with. So yeah, I'm not sure that Gattis has ever really had a quote real opportunity within an offense with a quarterback that he feels like, yeah, this guy can run the sort of stuff I want to run. And given that, it seems to me he's done pretty well.
I think that guy is. You know, it'll be interesting to see how this quarterback competition works out. Mm-hmm. All right, let's call this break time. Call it halftime, because we are getting some questions about external possibilities. And then I also want you guys to weigh in on these pro options. We'll talk some basketball as well as some hockey. But again, I think we're talking about two franchises, guys. Mostly the Raiders, a little bit the Giants. So we can get your take on both of those options for Jim, if they ever even become real options for Jim. We got to get to a break. Get to that on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Tick.
Clear on the radio.
I was going to make a point about Dabo. You know, he came from Alabama, and then he was an assistant head coach for a few years, I think, at Clemson before they raised him. So, like, he'd been at some bigger programs before. He was like Alabama Mike Hart. Like, they loved him there. And then, you know, he was not just the receivers coach. He was like assistant head coach, and, you know, this guy. And then they named him interim head coach for a while too, I think. And then he became the head coach after a year.
Yeah, who's the guy, the GM, the potential GM for the Raiders, Ira, that Jim knows? You're talking
He's
about
from the Colts. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, that would be the one. That would be the one, if it happens, that would sort of raise the temperature, raise the, you know, the bar of concern, if you want to call it that, when it comes to Jim going to the NFL. But I just don't share the sense of, I don't think it's, you know, these mentions of Jim to the NFL are as ominous as fans would have. Fans seem to believe. I just don't sense the appetite being quite as strong as the storylines would suggest, the Raiders being the one exception. But how serious are they really? Right. I mean, you look at some of these NFL reports, you talk to agents and you say, who are teams really targeting? You hear the Raiders, you know, mention of Jim, but not in any way that makes it sound like he's the favorite. Who are they talking to? Mayo? I mean, I think he's going to be here because I think the appetite for Jim Harbaugh is so much more pronounced in Ann Arbor and at Michigan than it is in the NFL. And then and it just so happens that, hey, he loves it here. You put those two things together, and I don't see him going anywhere. I think this is more about your window in the NFL is closing. If you're ever going to make the jump, you better look now, because the opportunity for Jim Harbaugh in the NFL will never be bigger and better than it is at this very moment.
I'm not so sure I agree with that. I mean, NFL is willing to go with older guys as coaches.
I don't,
you know, and you've got, I mean, Pete Carroll's still lurking around.
But I don't think that's an apples for apples. I don't think it's just an mm-hmm. age thing with Jim.
Mm-hmm.
See, you know, Jim Harbaugh is here. His idiosyncrasies, his quirks are endearing. Right. I mean, that's just Jim. He's our guy.
Yeah.
The NFL appetite. I don't think the NFL sees it the same. At least talking to these agents, I don't think it makes you think the NFL doesn't see it the same. So I just don't think the appetite is as the appetite for Harbaugh isn't what it was for Pete Carroll.
Back in 20 seconds, guys.
In my opinion. And that for Michigan, that's a good thing. Because I think it's part of what keeps him here. And I'm not saying that you're keeping him here by default, because I think he happens to want to be here too. But I think it's something that helps you keep him here. So, guys, I think with Jim, as NFL possibilities go, I think we're talking about the Raiders and the Giants. Craig, starting with you.
I can't see why he would take the Giants job. I'm not sure his family's going to be comfortable in New York City and or New Jersey. And that franchise is a mess. It's been a mess for a long time. I don't see any quick fixes there. He doesn't really have a quarterback there, in my opinion. It seems like if he goes to the NFL, it's going to be Las Vegas. As I get it, Jacksonville isn't an option.
Can't be. I mean, it would be if Balky wasn't there, because right. this guy, I think I mentioned this last week, mm-hmm. Tom Gamble is like his dude. I mean, Michigan fans will know the name from his brief time here with the staff, but he was around in the lead up to the Big Ten championship game. He was with the team. He was around leading up to the playoff game. So Gamble is his dude. I'm like, man, how is this dude around? He's the Jacksonville Jaguars, like mm-hmm. a personnel guy, but he was around Michigan at that time. So if Balky wasn't there, I absolutely think the Jags would be in play. There's just no way. There's just no way he could ever work with Trent Baalke.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And so Jacksonville would be, to me, a better fit for Jim than either the Giants or the Raiders. But so right now, the instinct is that it's the Raiders in the NFL or nothing.
I happen to agree. What about you, Brian?
I don't really follow the NFL that closely, but you know, I know enough memes that the Giants are just a total dumpster fire and will always be a dumpster fire. Mm-hmm. So the Raiders made the playoffs this year under an interim coach. I don't really think John Gruden was helping that situation. I think that's probably going to be fairly attractive if he gets offered it.
Yeah. I think that you're reading the situation's pretty strong. If the NFL really wanted Jim Harbaugh would be in the NFL right now. I think that it's pretty clear that Jim wants to test the waters, that he put his name out there, that a lot of pro school, you know, Miami's like, no, I'm not hiring Jim away. Chicago's like, nope, we are not even looking at him. Like and those are, you know, that's an owner that he knows really well, who's already paying him, right? And the place that drafted him and where he was a star. So like, okay, those two don't want him. So now your options are, he's got a relationship with the Davis family, and I think that's what makes Las Vegas attractive. But if either one of those programs, if the Giants or the Raiders were like, Jim Harbaugh is the guy who's going to lead our franchise back to the Super Bowl, they would have moved already. But like sitting around twiddling their thumbs and being like, oh yeah, Jim will be there. They're not looking at him as their number one candidate either. And then where are the leaks coming from? They're mostly coming from like sources inside the Michigan program say that Jim Harbaugh is looking. Well, that means it's coming from Jim's side. It's not coming from the NFL side. So that I think you're right. I think that the NFL interest is lukewarm. It only takes one. So, like, if the Raiders put something together, but, like, and both those teams need GMs. So, like, they're going to have an opportunity to find somebody who could work with Jim Harbaugh if they're going to go that route, because that's an absolute necessity. But, yeah, does Michigan care that, like, you know, their coach is obviously looking around? Is that, like, you know?
Of course they do, but they can't exactly do anything about it.
Well, sure. Like,
what can they do about it at this point?
They could say, I mean, yeah, they're not a whole lot. They could, like, let him go. But, yeah, I just, you know, even if they can't do anything about it, it does kind of suck that we're coming off a Big Ten championship. They're coming off, like, a 1969-level season where, you know, there's, you know, a lot of upside to go. And instead of, you know, roaring out and using that in recruiting and putting together a 2023 class and locking up Dante Moore and whatever, they are, you know, we've got a coach who's like, okay, I've done what I've came here to do and I'm ready to go. If it wasn't Jim Harbaugh, I would be really worried about a 58-year-old coach who's got one foot out the door.
Well, and look, let's be clear here. Jim is doing, he hired a defensive line coach. He is recruiting with the vigor of a guy who plans to be back. Like, he's doing the job like he's not going anywhere. So that this NFL dalliance is still going on, he's walking that tightrope. I mean, he isn't taking attention away from the task at hand to look over there. I mean, he's figured out a way to do that. Let's just put it that way. I mean, if there's a way in which this is harming Michigan, I guess I haven't seen it yet. I haven't seen the way that he's conducting his business right now doing anything more than being an inconvenience for Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, what Michigan can do, if someone asks that question, what can Michigan do? They can say, get back to work, you. But in fact, he is working, right? As far as we could tell, he's working and he's working hard, same as he always has. So, you know, that, you know, isn't a real question in the context of what's going on.
It helps here. Jim's quirks here are a bonus for Michigan because
they are.
Can your coach do two jobs at once? Well, this guy, like, that's his whole thing, right? Like, I'm a jackhammer. I don't take sick days.
Yeah.
So that's why I said at the end of that, if it wasn't Jim Harbaugh, because any other guy, I really would be worried. Jim Harbaugh, it's like, no, you know, he is the kind of guy who could, like, have one half of his brain looking in the NFL and the other half of his brain is, you know, 100% Michigan. And if it doesn't happen, you know, he's still an alum. He still went to Pioneer. He still got his kids in the school that he went to as a kid. So that's, you know, it's not like it's a bad situation to fall back on. It's not like a situation that Harbaugh would not be able to immediately transition back into, like, you know, whole milk Jim Harbaugh.
All right, last one on this. Give me one name, each of you, starting with you, Brian. One external name that you're like, okay, this is who I would look at if I were running the show and Jim left. Who's that one guy?
That was Luke Fickell, right? Like, it'd be hilarious. It'd be amazing.
Kerry Combs is your DB coach, man.
No. Kerry Combs can take the slow bus to China, but, like, The lousy pick is Luke Fickell.
Yeah. A slow bus to China is really slow too.
Yeah, Seth, you're the one guy.
I mean, it's Matt Campbell. It's still Matt Campbell. I mean, I thought that this year was, I think they built a program in Ames, Iowa. I don't think people understand how bad Ames, Iowa is. Like, you can't recruit there. You can't, like, get people to come to Iowa State. He's built a program there. He did pretty well at Toledo. He seems to want the job because, like, you know, his boy keeps on mentioning his name. And like I said, if Harbaugh takes McDonald, what does Matt Campbell come with? He comes with a good defensive coordinator. And that's kind of the only guy that he would really, I think, make sure that he brought. So, I mean, that seems like a pretty obvious guy to look at least. I don't know if there's any skeletons in the cupboard or any other things beyond that. But you're looking at a coach who looks pretty ready to move up. I think that this year, like that Iowa game, you can't count that against him. They doubled up on Iowa in yards. So, you know, that's where I would look. I don't know if you could sell the whole program on it, but, you know, as well as this year as you could last year, but I think that's still the guy.
All right. So, Craig, sorry about that.
No question. Kevin Kelly comes in and
That's the guy who never punts.
Never punts. Never punts. Tells Gattis, we're not punting this year. Rebuild your offense around the reality that we're not punting. You can save a scholarship in future years because you don't need a punter anymore. And that's my guy. I want to see a team that actually tries to do that. And I'm serious. And
Craig, you are a very silly person.
I know, but I'm serious about this. And so you asked my preference, Kevin Kelly.
All right, let's talk a little basketball. Michigan goes into Champaign last week without Hunter Dickinson and play probably the most spirited game of the season. It was as Phil Martelli said, it was a 4-minute game. They lost that. They pulled away, Illinois did, in the final 4 minutes of the contest. It was a real game up until then. Wonder if that's something that team can carry with it moving forward. They blew out a bad Maryland team. Real test coming up this Sunday, Brian, taking on the Indiana Hoosiers. So your take on the week and how you see Michigan faring over these next couple of games. Indiana and Northwestern feels like if they're going to build some momentum, now's the time.
Yeah, I mean, they seem to have found their feet a little bit. I mean, they did lose to Illinois, but if you had told me that Hunter Dickinson and Brandon Johns were going to be out of that game, I would have, and Jaron Falls was going to get 15 minutes, I would have predicted that Jaron Falls leave in the body bag. But they hung in there despite being shorthanded, and you kind of see some things coming, particularly in the last game where Caleb Houston actually hit some shots, and Michigan desperately needs that. And I think Frankie Collins, like that hook he hit from under the basket, just his overall vibe, you know, he's obviously struggling as a shooter, but he's a guy who's coming along. And I think you've got Musa coming along, you have Caleb Houston coming along, and it's just about trying to find some consistency game to game for players, you know, because Houston lights up the score, but I don't know if he scored against Illinois. And the same thing with Devontae Jones. Like, sometimes he's up there and he's putting up 17 points, and sometimes he got a bagel on the board. So, you know, getting those swings down to where it's like, yeah, when he's having an off game, he's got 8 points, is going to be big going forward, because you don't really know, except for Hunter Dickinson, who's going to chip in every game.
Right. I feel like, Seth, I feel like this is the time. This is the window. I look at the road games in particular. What are the most winnable road games? I kind of feel like, you know, it's Indiana and Penn State. Like, not to say that you can't win those other ones, but if you're going to get a road victory or two, makes this Sunday seem really, really important as you try to build up a decent resume for NCAA tournament consideration.
Oh, absolutely. And Indiana's a team that is going to be tough for Michigan because they have a lot of outside shooting and a really tough center. But, I mean, Michigan, you know, you get one of those games out of Hunter Dickinson, or, you know, maybe Diabate plays a lot more five in that game because he can match athletically with TJD, and that changes how Indiana plays because everybody collapses on him and that leaves those shooters open. Doesn't really look good for Michigan because Michigan's terrible about, you know, defending the perimeter and keeping organized. But, you know, I think Brian's right about Frankie Collins, that, like, as time progresses, you see more out of him. I call the that hook, that under the basket hook shot, I call that a super spreader event, because everybody in Chrysler opened their mouths so fast that all the masks in the whole building just plopped off. and everyone all of a sudden was sharing their diseases all across the way. So, I mean, that was a
Fortunately, it was a very socially distanced crowd.
Yes, it was. Yeah. And everybody in there had to show their card to show that they're vaccinated to get in. So, but yeah, there's been moments like that all of a sudden. There were one in the Illinois game too, and Devontae Jones had a great Illinois game, and he's kind of been coming along as Frankie's kind of showing up too. So if you could get massive improvement in the point guard position and get Caleb Houston to hit his shots, and then just get organized on the perimeter, and they're slowly getting there a little bit more, then they're not a good team, but they might be a sneak into the tournament team if they can get some of these upsets. And Indiana is a good spot to do it.
Yeah, Craig, it feels like the most sustainable thing that we've seen in the last six or so games is Devontae Jones. He's been double figures in five of those six. The one outlier is that goose egg that he had in there, but has been closer to what he was expected to be offensively in those five games than we saw him be earlier in the season. Now, defensively, against quickness, there are some issues, but he started to come along. Caleb Houston is obviously a much bigger question mark, but coming off his best game as a Michigan Wolverine.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting things going on here. Devontae is improving. What I like about him is he doesn't generally force shots at all. When he takes a shot, it's usually a good shot. And a bad shot is the next worst thing to a turnover, and he doesn't do that. Sort of ironically, perhaps, the key moment in the Illinois game was we're down one with four or five minutes to go, a little over five. And he misses a shot that he's been making all night, and then the whole game seems to run around the other way. In terms of Frankie, I love Frankie. I loved his game out of high school. He can't shoot. You're gonna have to realize that Frankie is never going to be a great shooter. He may never be a good shooter, but that doesn't mean he isn't a good basketball player. He's one of the best athletes I've ever seen on a basketball court. You saw it three times in this game. He split two guys for a layup early in a play that seemed impossible to me. He had an alley-oop, and I don't think Frankie is 6 feet tall, but he scored on an alley-oop on a pass that wasn't very good and still somehow managed to adjust and get it in. And then he made that impossible basket, whatever you call it, a super spreader event, because that's a good description. So Frankie is fun. If he can begin to improve his defense over the next couple of years, he's going to be here for 4 years. And if he can begin to improve his defense, he'll be a lot of fun for the fans and a real asset for Michigan. I just don't expect him to ever really shoot the ball at any kind of a level. There's just too many failures in his mechanics from my point of view.
To me, that's the balancing act for Juwan. Yes, Devontae Jones is playing better, but you got to get – I agree with you guys. You got to get Frankie minutes.
You got to get him in, and because he's going to be important, you know, starting next year for sure.
I think he's going to be important. I mean, listen,
this year.
Defensively, he's going to give you more than Devontae Jones as an on-the-ball defender. Now, you're going to have to pick your spots when you favor the defense over the offense. But there's no question that if you're getting beat off the bounce, if quickness is giving you an issue, it'd be nice to have Frankie to be able to go to off the bench, to feel confident enough to go to off the bench and say, all right, man, we got to make this sub and get Frankie in and get some stops on the defensive end. So,
I mean, a couple things in relation to what Coach Martelli said. I loved how he minimized the Illinois game when someone mentioned how hard Michigan played, and they did play hard. Minimized it saying, hey, if you don't play hard, why are you here? And I thought, no, they played more than hard. I mean, the work that Jace and Jaron Foles did on defense against Kofi was remarkable. That was a remarkable effort by those two guys. In particular, because Musa did okay, but Musa had foul trouble. It's sort of interesting that Juwan got upset with Borowski. He should have been upset with Keith Kimball, who kills us and made 16 calls in that game. 14 went Illinois' way. I mean, Keith Kimball is a guy who kills us, not Bo Borowski. Bo Borowski gives us a fair game and gives everyone a fair game, in my opinion.
You should do like a Pro Football Focus for refs.
Yeah. Well, I pay attention to refs, and certainly, my surmise is Juwan had a good reason to be upset with Borowski. But in the big picture, Borowski is probably one of the second best ref in the Big Ten, and so I don't want to get that upset. I don't want to get that upset with Bo Borowski.
Juwan coming at him when he came for. I think they were up like it was like 2 minutes left in the game, and they're up 20. Like,
yeah, it was.
Can't just be about that.
It was a surprising one. Now, in terms of Michigan, the big thing for Michigan and what they did in the Maryland game, and here's where I disagreed a bit with Coach Martelli. Again, he sort of dismissed Maryland, or he pumped Maryland up as a team, saying how they were ahead. Maryland's terrible, and so, but. That said, Michigan did something in the game that was really smart, and they haven't done it as well, is they were very able to get the ball into the post. And when they got the ball into the post, if he wasn't doubled, he went after the basket and did so very well, as Hunter always does. And when he was doubled, he got the ball out. And when he got the ball out, he ended up with 6 assists in the game, which is a lot for a center. He got the ball out, and he got Caleb squared. When the ball comes inside out, your shooter is going to be squared. When it comes around the outside of the perimeter, your shooter is less likely to be squared. And so you're less likely to shoot a high percentage because it's harder to square to the basket. And so Caleb, when he gets the ball squared and he has time, which you usually do when it comes inside out, is a good shooter. It's when he's forced or rushed or the ball is side to side and he has to re-square when he has more problems. And so I felt like this was a really, really good game for Michigan, and it augurs well against other teams if they can continue to do it. They match up well against Indiana. I think they have a shot there. They certainly match up well against Northwestern, who's a lot better than probably the casual fan realizes. I think Northwestern beat Michigan State the other night. That wasn't a fluke. And that was at East Lansing, and was out without their best player, without Northwestern's best player. So, it's an interesting basketball season, and Michigan does have a chance here. That, you know, they're certainly not dead, but it's going to be very difficult.
Brian, as we close out here, a few words on hockey. Another winning weekend for Michigan, a sweet Penn State into a big series with Minnesota, and you highlighted last week that this is a different Minnesota team from the one Michigan saw earlier in the season.
Well, I mean, they've lost Jack LaFontaine, so they're trying to figure out what's going on at goalie. And Michigan, I think, was missing a couple of key players in that series, but they did not actually play very well against Penn State. They got outshot massively in the second game. They were able to, you know, do some crazy things because that's who they are. But, you know, I thought that their play was pretty disappointing. They keep picking up majors, which is, I mean, and the one Jack Summers picked up in the Saturday game was the most legitimate, and you can't have any complaints about that. So there's a sort of a discipline issue running through the team. They're obviously massively talented, but this is going to be a really important series for Michigan because this might be one of the last one or two or three before they lose 4 guys to the Olympics. And they're in a really good position. They're second in pairwise. I don't think there's really any realistic way that they drop out of the tournament with these guys gone, especially because the rest of the top of college hockey will also be losing guys. But this is going to be a really big series for Michigan, and it's at Minnesota, which means it's Olympic ice, which means it's going to be fun as hell.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's, you know, with Michigan's got to stop taking major penalties, and the one against Summers was absolutely the correct call.
It was the stupidest penalty of the year. Yeah. And Summers had just given up a goal against Penn State by massively misplaying a 2-on-1. And I'd be really surprised to see him out there this weekend. I just don't know how you keep playing him given his last game.
Brian, did you think that Penn State sort of changed their style a bit?
They have changed their style from a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Definitely. They are much more conservative. They don't have the talent. They're just lining up across the blue line and trying to get Michigan to dump in, and they have struggled against that style of play. Yeah. So, you know, they've made some headway on it, but Penn State did a good job frustrating them. And then when they get in the offensive zone, they just put the puck on net. They still do that. So their shot totals are a little bit misleading because they are like, they took the wrong lessons from like Corsi and stuff, like where it's like, if you play hockey normally, having more shot attempts is good. And they are like, more shot attempts, good, better hockey. That's not how it works. So, yeah. So I don't think the shot gaps were as indicative of the play, because I thought on Friday they really dominated zone time and had way more grade A chances. But the Saturday game was pretty disappointing from my standpoint. But to be able to come back and win it is still good, and they have just a massive amount of talent. So they're able to win some games where they didn't actually play that well.
Good enough to play bad and still win. That's when you're really freaking good. So, big series this week. We'll be back next week to talk about it. Fellas, always a pleasure. Always great to have you on. Awesome insight and conversation. Looking forward to doing it again next week. Looking forward to talking to the rest of you tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK at the Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, Accumulus Station.